Welcome to the Ubuntu UK podcast. This is episode 10. You're greeted here by me, Davey.
I'm Tony.
I'm Alan.
And I'm me.
So we made it to double figures, guys.
Oh my life. We could be really geeky and say it's episode 2 in binary.
Okay. No, we're not going to do that. But what we will say is Simon brought us a celebration cake. Yay. Thank you, Simon.
More cake.
Yeah, photo on the website. What's coming up in the show today?
We've got the competition results for giving away another Canonical store voucher.
And we've got a new competition where we're going to give away the efficient PC that we reviewed on the last podcast.
We're going to talk about how you can watch video on Linux.
We're going to talk about the great work that's going on with the transcription of the podcast.
We've also got a discussion on ignoring freedom aspect of selling Ubuntu.
And we've got some feedback.
And some news.
Sounds like a fun-packed show.
It is.
We talked on a previous episode about using Myth TV to record and watch TV, specifically kind of Freeview or satellite.
Broadcast.
Yeah, broadcast TV over the air. But it seems to me that there's been a huge increase in online delivery of television programmes, and that you can now get basically any television programme legitimately from the broadcaster, at least here in the UK. Does that sound reasonable?
Some of them have services, yeah, that make it available online, but it's not all available on Linux, unfortunately.
Okay, some examples. I mean, the big one in the UK is the BBC, and then there's two other largest channels, ITV and Channel 4.
Yeah, and Channel 5 actually have some of their stuff online as well.
Okay. Yeah, but who watches stuff on Channel 5?
CSI?
Oh, I guess Neighbours is on there now.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go, you see.
But all of these systems are DRM encumbered, aren't they?
Yes and no. The BBC iPlayer, one of the problems with the BBC iPlayer is it's actually multiple products branded as one thing. So there's the version of iPlayer that is natively to run on Windows, and it uses Contiki peer-to-peer software to share and download at the same time.
Right.
And that it runs on Windows, and it uses Windows-based DRM, digital rights management, or if you're Richard Stallman, digital restrictions management.
Just to stop you copying it and uploading it somewhere else.
But also, so you can't watch after a certain date as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because they want you to only watch it up to 30 days or something, isn't it? So something like that. No, I've completely ignored that as
it's
well.
It's on Windows, so
we have no idea. No concept. But that's one of their products. But there's a second one, which is the Flash Player. So if you've got a modern version of Flash on your PC, Mac, or Linux PC, you can go to their website, bbc.co.uk/iPlayer, and you can just click play and watch a TV program in the Flash Player embedded in your browser.
But you can, on Flash Player 9 and above, you can actually make it full screen, can't you?
You can. I've had kind of mixed results with that. Sometimes it's it plays full screen fine. Sometimes it plays a bit choppy, and it's not as smooth as watching a TV, of course. But your mileage may vary. But then there's a third way. If you've got an iPhone, an Apple iPhone, one brand, one model of mobile phone, you can point that at the iPlayer website and it will deliver QuickTime movies. And because the Apple iPhone doesn't have Flash built in, it doesn't use the Flash Player. It uses, you actually get delivered a whole MOV file that you can play on the iPhone, which is kind of annoying because they're delivering that content directly to one platform, the iPhone, but not to anyone else, because we can play MOV files on Linux using VLC or whatever media player.
The MOV files presumably aren't DRM.
No, because the iPhone doesn't have any DRM in QuickTime.
Isn't it actually MP4?
I thought. Well, it's QuickTime. It's H.264, MP3, or AAC, or whatever it is.
Okay, so how does this impact us in the Linux world, then?
Well, the kind of annoying thing is the fact that they've deliberately made it hard for us to get at that. When you visit the iPlayer website, it detects what type of browser you've got and what platform you're on, and says, well, you're not an iPhone, therefore I'm not going to deliver MOV files to you. I'm not going to let you download the MOV files. You will only use the Flash Player. But if you've got a mobile phone and it says, I am an iPhone, then it will deliver the MOV files. So they technically can deliver the MOV files to us, but they choose not to. And that's kind of, I find that kind of irritating, especially as I'm a licensed payer just like anyone else.
Are they choosing not to? Or are they just trying to help the user to not have to go through the hassle of making a selection? They're just trying to do all the work themselves.
No, they actually deliberately block it. They've done some things to make sure that if you're using anything other than an iPhone, you cannot get access to the MOV files.
Okay, well, if you look at it this way, if they can't actually present the content without any sort of DRM or any sort of protection, yeah, then that's the reason it's through the Flash, because you can't save it locally. When you actually get a QuickTime file, you can save that locally using what we're going to talk about in a few moments, I suspect. But with the, as I understand it, the Apple iPhone can't actually save whilst it's watching it. So that is actually a DRM in itself, the fact that you can't actually save it to the device. So I can understand why they want to lock out other devices.
I can understand. I can kind of understand why they do it. I totally understand that the whole reason is the content creators, the people who supply programs to the BBC, have agreements with the BBC that say you must not make this freely downloadable without any DRM. I can totally understand that. But it's just kind of annoying.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That, you know, they do make it available for one specific proprietary platform, Windows, and they make it available for another specific proprietary platform, the iPhone, but not for anyone else.
So you can actually get hold of these shows and download them as separate files under Linux if you use these clever scripts.
Yeah, there's a few of them that popped up when the iPhone, when the iPhone version of iPlayer first came out. A few people wrote some scripts in Perl, and there's one written in Ruby, and there's another one written in PHP. Everyone's had a go at writing them, and basically what they do is pretend to be an iPhone, and they visit, the script visits the BBC page pretending to be an iPhone and acting like an iPhone, so the BBC website delivers the content, delivers the MOV file, and then the Linux based script or whatever, the Perl or PHP, saves it locally so you can watch it at your leisure on the device of your choice.
Now, actually, it's funny you also say that. There was another version as well, written as a Myth TV plugin.
Right.
So you could actually stream directly.
Oh.
But the actual developer for that didn't exactly get a warm response from the Myth TV core developers. So I think he's actually slowed down on the development.
When you say not warm response, in what way?
Well, they told him that they would never get merged until it was approved by BBC.
Right.
Oh, okay. And did they do that because they were just worried about repercussions, yeah, or did they have, actually had kind of notices about, yeah, do not do this?
I mean, no, it was just that they're worried about it. The Myth TV project is very worried about trying to protect itself. A few years ago, there was a plugin for downloading torrents. It was a torrent plugin. No, everyone knows you can use torrents legally, but that was told that would never be a that plugin would actually never get included. So he ceased development on that as well.
But just because it's not in the base product, surely, you know, it's not out of the realms of possibility that it could be a plugin or an add-on or something.
Yeah, to be honest, myself and someone else actually thought about carrying it on, but it's fine that 25th hour in the day. So,
So what other options are there for TV on Linux then?
There's a Zattoo, isn't there?
Zattoo, yeah. ZATTOO.com.
What does that do?
It's a piece of software you download. It's a client that you download, and it's available for Windows, Mac, and there's a native Linux version.
Okay.
And when you download it, you have to sign up with your an email address and a postcode, so they know geographically where you are. And when you open it up, it connects to their server and does some geolocation to figure out where you are in the world, so that it can deliver TV channels to you that you're allowed, in inverted commas, to see in your region. So, for example, if I download Zattoo Player and I register and then I sign in and I open up the Zattoo Player, it gives me a list of TV channels, which are the standard ones you get in the UK, BBC 1, 2, 3, you know, that kind of stuff. And okay, you just watch it in a window on your PC.
So it's just a live streaming kind of thing. It's not a download it and save it and watch it later.
No, it doesn't give any option for download. They've said that later on they'll probably implement the ability to pause and maybe record later, but at the moment it just does live, in inverted commas, live. It's about 1 or 2 seconds behind. It's not far off live TV.
Is that legal?
Some people at the BBC would argue it isn't. They argue it is because they use some loophole in the law that says that it's okay for third parties to rebroadcast terrestrial TV. Because there's some loophole that allows other third parties, like cable companies, to retransmit, rebroadcast TV channels. And so they're just using that loophole. And I believe there has been some legal action taken by the BBC, but it's not actually resulted in anything as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
And I pay my TV license, so, you know, I'm happy to.
You've got a clear conscience.
Well, hang on. Yeah. I mean, I pay my TV license, but does that mean I can go to my local torrent site and download BBC, the content that was on BBC?
Well, the difference between the torrent and watching a stream is that with a torrent, you're sharing it with other people. It's not just a case of you downloading it for your own consumption, for which I can see there is an argument that morally it's okay that I can download a TV program that effectively I've paid for the creation of. But when you're using a torrent, you're not just downloading it, you're also uploading it to people who possibly aren't in your jurisdiction and possibly haven't paid their TV license.
But what I mean, isn't that their responsibility? But if I upload something and I'm only uploading it to yourself and Tony, who are, I assume, are both TV license payers,
which is a theoretical scenario,
then yeah. But I mean, that's your responsibility to make sure you're not downloading it from me.
Yeah, I mean, it's your moral compass, and which way it points is up to you.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Simon, you a license payer?
I'm a license payer, but to be honest, I don't use it. I don't watch broadcast TV at all.
What, nothing?
Nope. I just don't watch TV.
He's a secret Emmerdale watcher. Right?
No!
He's got a PVR and he records every episode of Emmerdale.
He has it on a loop on his desktop wallpaper.
No broadcast. But I do use Miro or Miro, depending on sorry, the ring set.
Depending on who cares.
I watch some of the video podcasts on that. And also use VLC to watch some of the stuff that's broadcast by NASA TV.
Does that just work? Did you have to do anything to make it work? Or?
Aptitude install VLC and watch NASA. That's it. It just works.
But you go to, what do you do? Go to the NASA website, NASA.gov.whatever it is.
Yeah. And
click play.
Click play, go.
Cool. It's good that we've got these things that are open source and play this stuff back properly. Is the Zatu thing open source?
No.
And is the...
Miro is. Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Right. And the BBC things have Flash for iPlayer if you're on Linux.
Well, yes, that is an option, is to watch it on via Flash, yeah.
So we're reliant on Flash?
For that particular...
And it doesn't work with Ganache, the open source version.
Oh, it's funny you say that, because I was actually speaking to one of the developers at...
Rob Savoy.
Yes, for SwiftDeck, and he's actually interested in actually working to get iPlayer working. So
with Ganache?
Yeah, right. No, with SwiftDeck.
Oh, that's the other guy. That's not Rob Savoy.
Oh, sorry, what's SwiftDeck?
It's the SwiftDeck, SWFDEC. It's Flash player, open source Flash player.
Okay. But it doesn't work. So essentially, you can't sit and watch TV on Linux without using some sort of proprietary software. Unless you torrent.
Yes, you can if you've got a TV aerial. Myth TV.
Oh, so you could just, using a tuner.
Has
anybody
tried Banshee? Banshee 1 now has video support.
Oh, okay.
It does. It has, it's got some, it supports video podcasts.
Okay.
And you can play back, any kind of video.
Now, everyone seems to be raving about Banshee. What's it all about?
It does video podcasts, and it organises your music quite well, and it syncs with iPods. So, in effect, you could download video content from the web and then synchronise it to a video player like an iPod. So, we've got a few options. Miro, Zatu, iPlayer.
Or get a life and not watch TV.
Like Simon.
Like me.
He sits and watches them doing their transmissions. Houston, we have a problem.
Go in, please.
Excuse me for being interesting.
I'm going to be fair,
Simon must watch them because it must be like watching a race, motor racing, where you think, hang on this corner, they're going to crash. And I guarantee that's the only reason you watch the space launch.
You really want to know the reason? I'm a radio ham. All right, and there's amateur radio on the ISS. That's where it comes from.
That blew your theory out of the water, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I still think you must watch it go bang. I don't know.
Fail. Right, this is our 10th episode, and we've done some great stuff, and we've always been after feedback from the community.
And contribution.
Yeah. But recently, in the last sort of month or so, it's come in an unexpected form, I suppose, in that we're now transcribing all of the podcasts.
We must be mental.
Well, that's why we get other people to do it.
Yeah, that's what I mean about the sort of the feedback. We're not actually doing it, although we've sort of set it up. Members of the community are jumping in and transcribing the podcast, which is fantastic news.
Who's doing this?
It all started when I listened to some podcast that was promoting how to promote your podcast. And one of the things he said was get someone to create show notes, effective show notes and transcriptions. And then it just clicked that we should have transcriptions for a couple of reasons. And one of the reasons he mentioned was accessibility. But the main reason that this guy said you should do it is for Google juice, because all of this stuff that we're saying is not Googleable. Whereas if we have it transcribed and it's in text form, people can easily get to our website when they search for terms like whatever we've talked about this week or last week.
So if we have a transcription that has the word Drobo in it, if we've talked about the Drobo thing over and over again, it will get a higher Google rating than just saying Drobo once in the show notes.
No, well, not so much just the word Drobo. It's other things, like we've said the word Drobo and Ubuntu. And we said Drobo and Ubuntu and resilience and Linux. And, you know, it's not just individual words that you've got in the show notes. It's like the whole combination of words. Because, you know, people search for wacky stuff. They don't just search for, you know, type Drobo. We're never going to get to the top of the list of people searching for the word Drobo.
No, but we would be more relevant. Because we've had a whole segment on it and we discussed it, we might be quite interesting to people who are looking for stuff on Drobo. So therefore, you know, because we've said Drobo a lot of times, and that it would appear
even more in this episode.
Yes. And it would appear in the transcript a lot of times. Therefore, we would show up in a Google result as being more relevant to somebody who is searching on.
I'm not sure we would become more relevant. There's certain arguments that with words repeated on a page, Google actually knocks you downwards.
All right.
In the search rankings, because if you know, like a page that's got Viagra, Viagra, Viagra all over it, it's going to go down the rankings rather than up.
Yeah. So we should avoid the segment on Viagra then.
Yeah, and should avoid saying Drobo, 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 Drobo. Just for the transcribers, now, that's really easy.
Now, we actually had requests before for transcriptions, but to be honest, a lot of work already goes into actually doing this podcast, and we didn't think we could really commit time ourselves.
Not that it shows.
not that it shows. So we thought, well, it's not really viable because we already spend so much time doing this. We're actually using version control where people can actually, they can work on their own computer, save it into a folder, and then commit what they've actually done into the Launchpad Bazaar branch. So I mean, what this actually means is that multiple people can work on the same piece, and so it distributes the work around people who want to help.
So somebody could do one segment of the show, and somebody else could do another segment, and both put it into the...
Or even less than that. I mean, there's a number of steps. Dave found this software called...
Transcriber.
Yeah.
Cunning.
Very conveniently enough. It's quite old, and it's not the most elegant software, but it works, and it works really, really well.
And it's packaged in Ubuntu?
Yep. And, you know, all you got to do is open the audio file, and there's a little bit of admin you do, like specify who the speakers are in that episode, and then you can just go through the episode carving it up into lumps, and once you've carved it up into lumps, you can start typing... the text as people are saying it. It's really very easy to use.
It is very simple. And the good thing is you can't mess it up because you can roll it back because it's all version controlled.
Well, you can, I mean, before you even put your version into the Bazaar repository, you have a local copy, so you can monkey around with it locally as much as you like before you commit your version into sure. the system. So yeah, you can play around with it. And if you mess it up, you can undo that locally.
Now, one of the really good things about this software is it actually saves it in XML format, which is similar sort of markup to HTML, I suppose you could say, where you've got an opening and a closing for each part. Now, there was actually someone in the community by the name of Stephen O'Neill, and he actually made a template that could help us convert the XML into HTML. So what this means is that we don't actually have to do very much to actually convert the native file that actually comes from Transcriber into HTML. So what this means is that people in the community who have actually helped do the transcriptions, their work can be put onto the website very easily using this file that's using this template that Stephen has made. So well done.
It changes the look and feel, doesn't it? It makes it look like a page on our website. It's using the same theme, isn't
yeah.
it?
So that'd be at podcast.ubuntu-uk.org/transcriptions.
Excellent.
Okay, so why else are we doing this other than Google Juice?
Well, there's a few reasons. Yeah, okay, there's the Google Juice that, you know, we bring in, but there's also the fact that there are some people in the community who can't actually hear us.
If I try and get closer to the microphone, maybe
that'll help. I don't think that'll help in this case. We've got people in the community who want to be able to, for example, take part in our competitions, but they can't because they can't hear the show. Maybe if they've got a hearing disability or hearing difficulty or, you know, for whatever reason they can't listen to the show, maybe they might be able to read it instead.
Now, we also had at least one person that actually said that they wanted to, they were listening to our show, but we were sometimes talking too fast. So for people who where English isn't their native language, they can actually listen to it and look at the transcriptions at the same time to actually see what we're saying.
All right.
So that's another thing.
Are we making these up as we go along, these reasons for doing it?
No, there was that German guy, wasn't there? I can't remember his name.
Yeah, who made a comment, actually, one of our very first episodes said that he couldn't understand us because we spoke too quickly and with a text version. In fact, if he were to load Transcriber, he could listen to it and watch the cursor fly along the bottom of the screen and the little waveform going along the bottom of the screen in Transcriber. And the text going down the screen at the same time, so we can actually watch and listen, you know, read and listen at the same time, like having subtitles.
So we're peeping teaching English.
So how can people get involved if they want to help out? I assume we're looking for people to help out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we need a massive team, because, you know, this is only our 10th podcast, and we've actually already completely transcribed episode 1.
Excellent.
And there are people working on the other episodes right now, and so, you know, yes, it would be lovely if people could contribute and join us. There's a couple of things worth looking at on Launchpad. We'll put a link in the show notes to Launchpad. There's a team you can join, and we send out mails to the team to let you know what's going on and if we're making any changes. But also there's a page on the wiki that details how you actually use the Transcriber program and how you use Bazaar. Because one of the things when we talked about using revision control is that people, that might be a stumbling block. That might be a barrier to entry. People can't just edit a text file and send it to us.
But I said that I think that's a good thing, because I think trying to get people into using version control, I think is a worthwhile point. So if it's a reason where, because not everyone can code, so not everyone can commit to a BZR branch, but everyone can transcribe, therefore they can learn to use version control. So I thought that was a worthy point.
Yeah, it's a great way in for people to learn simple Bazaar and Launchpad as well.
So there's a transcriptions team on Launchpad. Is it just for the Ubuntu UK podcast, or is it for anything else?
At the moment, in practice, yes. We've only got the Ubuntu UK podcast in there. But there's no reason why any other podcast, or in fact any other audio product, couldn't be transcribed in this method. And we've approached a couple of other podcasts and asked them if they want to have theirs transcribed. And the idea behind this being, our podcast only comes out once every 2 weeks. And so in theory, we'll have a bunch of people idle, not doing any transcriptions. Once our back catalogue of, you know, 10 episodes is done, we'll have nothing for them to do until 2 weeks' time when the next one comes out. And there'll be a flurry of activity and then nothing to do. And so in between that time, in theory, they could do other podcasts.
Can we expand this? If somebody decided that they wanted to do British Sign Language, right now it's just audio, could we use the Launchpad system to do video?
How do you mean, Simon? Could we use Launchpad to do video? What you mean, have a person doing British Sign Language video?
Yeah.
I would say not, because trying to check things like that into a branch is going to be quite messy. I think there's better ways of doing it.
Yeah, the revision control system doesn't work well with monstrous binary files.
But you could, in theory, do that. You could produce videos using British Sign Language, using an interpreter, like on the news, like BBC TV or whatever, doing the podcast.
Yeah, there's no reason why we couldn't have an OG version of the podcast, which was an OG video instead of an OG audio, and you watch it instead of listening to it.
I wonder if there's actually any tools out there to actually generate British Sign Language symbols from a text file.
I don't think there are, but I think people have thought of that idea before, and it's quite tricky to do, because there are different languages. They are different languages, but I think if people could get it working, it would be absolutely fantastic.
Maybe we should get someone on who knows a bit about British Sign Language.
So where can people see these transcriptions?
Right now, as we speak, they're currently all still inside Launchpad, but Dave's working on a system that will grab the latest version of a completed episode and put it on the website with a style sheet that makes it look pretty.
One of the other neat things about Launchpad is it makes it very easy to do translations. So we could potentially actually translate our written podcast into other languages using the community. So if people who speak
other languages.
Other languages, that's the word I was looking for. if they really wanted to hear our dribble, they could read it in their own native language.
So that's quite impressive, actually, the community just jumping in, deciding they're going to do something and getting on with it, providing another product, another way of enjoying the podcast. Ubuntu 8.04.1 has been released, incorporating all the fixes since 8.04, and that includes Firefox 3 final release.
So does that come with an SSL vulnerability?
Nope.
Oh, just a DNS vulnerability then.
Ah.
Best Buy are selling Ubuntu in their stores and online for $20.
I can buy the CD for $20.
Or for free from Shipit.
If you don't mind waiting.
We would like to make a slight correction. Lug Radio, in their most recent episode, mentioned that the Premier podcast was now ending. We're not. We're still going very strong. Thank you.
One of the things that the Ubuntu UK Loco team is supposed to do is advocate the use of Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, one of the big things that a lot of people use to advocate the use of Ubuntu and Linux in general and any other free software is the freedom aspect, the free and open source.
Yep, sure.
The big four freedoms.
Yes, the free software. Well, not necessarily, because different people have different ideas of the freedom.
But freedom with a capital F.
Freedom with a capital F.
Beard, yes. Stallman type freedom.
Yeah. Well, and you're getting towards the point that I was going to make is some people find it quite difficult to get. And it's quite often quite difficult to explain. And I wondered how we could sell Ubuntu to people without using the freedom argument at all. So what could we say to people to convince them to use Ubuntu without talking about the freedom? Because the problem is that some people just don't care.
Yeah. It's like proprietary software, free software, who cares?
It's just software.
Is it good software or bad software?
Mm.
Yeah,
but hang on.
The people who use Firefox on Windows or Mac or whatever that just like it because it's a good browser rather than because it's free software.
Well, one of the first ones has got to be it's virus-free. Now, I know we covered malware and all the rest of it in a previous podcast, but that is one of the ways I sell Ubuntu to people that really don't care.
So they don't have to worry about viruses?
Yeah.
Is that because you perceive or you know that these people have experience of viruses?
Yep. My sister is a prime example at a PC loaded full of viruses and all sorts of good stuff. And I said, this disk will help and you won't have to pay for anything and it will just work. And that sold it.
That's probably true at the moment, but...
Yeah, how long we can keep that argument.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's good for now.
Right now, it works.
But then, you know, there are lots of Windows PCs that don't have any viruses.
Yeah, I've had viruses on Windows PCs when I used to use Windows. I've had viruses on them. Not that I've been infected, I've had files that, you know, I happened to acquire from somewhere that had a virus in them, but I've never been infected, so I'm not sure that argument would hold any sway with me, but that's because I'm quite careful.
I suppose if you're not careful and you're the sort of person who doesn't know that such a file that you download may have a virus, you know, if you're easily fooled into the sort of I love you virus scams or things like that, then having a system which is resilient to viruses may help.
Hang on, can we just back up a sec? Are you telling me you've honestly never had a virus?
I've never been infected by one, no.
Wow. Okay.
Not because, you know, I'm holier than thou and I practice safe computing or, you know, in any way, you know, I don't do anything weird in the way that I use my computer. It's not like I have some kind of sandbox environment that I test everything out in. I don't do anything like weirdly, wackily, more secure than your average Joe. I'm just not an idiot when it comes to attachments in emails and downloading random executables and clicking on smileys in websites.
I think that's really unfair, and I don't think you understand the average user. You're not an average user.
I'm not an average user, and I know I've been infected by viruses before, so, you know, maybe
I said a combination of things. I'm not an idiot was one. And another one was, I don't click on attachments, like random attachments in emails, and I don't click on stupid smiley things in web browsers, which a lot of people do.
Yeah, you're educated. We're all educated. Other people aren't. They don't understand the fact that clicking the smiley face could download a Trojan and infect their system. It's the, you know, the wonderful internet, and why would anybody want to do that? So maybe people don't understand that.
I don't doubt that, but his question was, why have you never got a virus? Talking to me,
yeah, fair enough.
And that was my point. I've never had a virus. But my sister has.
Yeah.
My sister's got three daughters who have infected her PC with all kinds of stuff. And I've had to personally go and wipe their machine and, you know, reinstall it and all that kind of stuff.
So when you did that, did you put Windows back on?
Yep.
Okay, well, that's another...
Go on, ask me why. Ask me why.
No, don't.
No, I don't need to. Oh, in fact, go on. No, why? Why did you put Windows on?
Because they want to play games.
Okay, well, it's a fair one.
They keep getting us on that one, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Well, the main reason that I've had to reinstall Windows, which I don't enjoy at all, for people to use recreationally at home.
Does anyone enjoy reinstalling Windows?
But the one of the main reasons that I have to do that for family and friends and things such as that is because that's what they're used to at work. And so they're using one piece of software, one operating system at work, and then they go home and have to use a totally different one. That's one main reason.
So that's the reason for people not to use Ubuntu at home?
Yes, yeah.
So how do we get over that? What other options are there?
That's an argument I have a lot as well. If you use Ubuntu at home or Linux at home and Windows at work, in using both, you're actually understanding more about computing rather than just being a user.
But do they care?
Yeah, a lot of people, it's like a hammer. I just want it to hammer nails in. I don't care what it's made of or...
I think if you put it in the right context, they can understand. My wife's currently looking for a new job, and most people want experienced computer users. Well, she uses Ubuntu. So if somebody puts a Windows computer in front of her, it will initially be lost because it's unfamiliar. Whereas if you use both, you understand the philosophy behind right-clicking, getting a drop-down menu, left-clicking, and getting a sort of a standard set of things. You come to expect things to work in a certain way. And that does apply to Windows and Ubuntu at the same time.
So do you think that they are similar enough that you can say, it's like Windows, give it a try and you know, you'll be able to use it? Or are there enough differences that you can't use that argument to sell Ubuntu? Yeah, the menus are on the top by default.
Well, take a look at something like the Asus EPC. That's running, you know, a lot of them. Some of them are running Windows, but a lot of them are running Linux, and people seem to get on with those okay. And that does, and it looks a bit like Windows. I mean, it has got a Windowsy theme, but it doesn't look the like
major,
Windows.
The major difference, I would say, between the E methodology is it's actually supplied by a manufacturer like that. Now, if you go around to someone's house and say, try this operating system, when the computer came with Windows, they're going to be less trusting of it when they actually buy the hardware with the operating system pre-installed.
So someone like Efficient PC, who sell computers that have got Ubuntu pre-installed, you think you'd have more luck with one of those because it comes with it out the box?
I think so.
It gives it an air of legitimacy.
Mm. Rather than you walking around there with a dodgy CD in your hand.
With Ubuntu written on the front of it.
With a Sharpie. Yeah.
Is that why
you're sitting for 4 hours trying to get everything working?
Well, that's the other thing. That's the winner with OEM installed stuff is it works. Like, yeah. You know, everything on this EPC works. I can play video. In fact, the only thing that doesn't work is QuickTime Video, but everything else works. Like Flash, MP3s, I can get on the wireless. You know, none of that has any problem whatsoever, but it's not running Ubuntu. So is that what we should be doing? Is getting, I mean, obviously we should be doing this, getting more hardware vendors to supply pre-installed working.
I think so.
I think that's probably being done, I would imagine.
Hmm.
By how many vendors?
Well, I mean, it started with Dell some time ago, as we know.
And then we've got the Ubuntu Mobile going on various little devices and this netbook remix and all that kind of malarkey.
Hmm. So you can get Ubuntu on PCs, but why should people choose it over choosing Windows, XP or Vista?
We'd like to think the cost element would be one argument, but that doesn't seem to work.
But it costs more to get it pre-installed from some vendors than the Windows version.
Yeah, some vendors, yeah.
Yeah, so that's that
argument. Again, that doesn't work.
All right, well, another way I sell it, and it kind of rolls out of the last one, is that if you have problems, it's easy for me to log in and fix it for you. Well, I can talk to you over the phone and do it behind the scenes.
Yeah, okay, you can SSH to it, sure. But, yep. I mean, what's the difference between doing that and using VNC on Windows or remote desktop?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things. There's very few unique selling points that we can say, you know, we can do this on Ubuntu, and you absolutely can't do that on Windows.
One thing I can really actually push, I was on a sort of Windows computer during the week, actually, and something which I just don't experience on Linux is Googling for drivers. That's something you really have to do on Windows, and it's not something I have to do very often on Linux.
No, you just have to Google how to configure the drivers on Linux.
How to compile them.
Well, no, I mean, generally, it already comes with the kernel, whereas with Windows, you need to find all these...
For the most part, that is true. Yeah. Out of the box, Linux supports more hardware than any other operating system.
Yeah, a decent modern Linux distribution, like Ubuntu, should support pretty much... all modern hardware. There's bound to be the odd sort of, you know, wireless driver or something that doesn't.
It does work soon.
Yeah. But then getting back to our original point of selling Ubuntu, the user doesn't care, because when a user buys a PC that has Windows, it's pre-installed with all the drivers, and it comes with the manufacturer's CD for the motherboard. So even if they do reinstall, it can be a bit hairy, but usually they've got all the drivers they need, usually, if it's a decent manufacturer.
They would only care if the driver doesn't work.
Yeah.
If you install Ubuntu and something doesn't work, that's a black mark. If you install it and it all works, then, yeah, it's the same as Windows.
Well, yeah. I installed Windows on my laptop and it didn't find the sound card. It doesn't always all work.
I was assuming that it was an OEM-shipped version.
Was an OEM recovery CD, and it didn't work. But yeah.
Okay, so there are support options that are roughly equivalent to the Windows support options. There's virus issues that are, you know, manageable on Windows and Ubuntu. There's a cost issue which says that Ubuntu may or may not be cheaper than Windows.
It's not looking good, is it, Tony?
No. Actually, Ubuntu is cheaper, because with a pre-installed Ubuntu machine, you get an Office package and you get a massive repository of extra software that you can download and install for nothing.
That's true.
So overall, over the life cycle of the computer, the software cost is definitely cheaper. The upfront cost of the operating system itself, like, you know, Linux and the basic graphical user interface, is going to be, you know, similar between Windows and Ubuntu. I know it's free, but because of the way the OEMs sell it, it comes out much the same price. But in the long term, a Windows user is going to go out and buy, you know, Microsoft Office, Photoshop, and whatever other Mickey Mouse software they run.
Or do they just download it illegally off the internet, don't they?
It's very difficult to argue against that one.
Hmm. Of course, they're going to have to upgrade the hardware as well. You know, Ubuntu and Linux will work on older hardware, which has got to be a good thing.
But one of the problems with that argument is that people are constantly now in the mindset that they have to upgrade their PC. I have a friend who had a PC and it just got a little bit slow, not because it was broken, but because he got quite a bit of software on it. And I said, well, you know, just give Windows a reinstall, because that's what he wanted to stay on Windows. I said, well, give Windows a reinstall. Nah, I think I'll go out and buy a new computer. And people are resigned to the fact that every 2 years they buy a new computer, as if that's the right thing to do. And they don't think, well, actually, I could run, you know, Ubuntu on this older hardware.
Okay, we've discussed quite a few points here. Now, I think we can split this into the freedom issues and the ethical reasons. And on the other side, we've got the pragmatic actual reasons. Now, we haven't really talked very much about the actual freedom issues. Now, I would actually be hard-pushed to say anyone I know in the Linux community actually got into Linux because of the ethical reasons. That's something that becomes secondary, I found.
I did.
Really?
I did. Definitely. Yeah. Couldn't stand the fact that everybody was ripping off Windows software. Don't buy it. Get a crack version. That and the geekiness were the two main drivers for going to Linux.
Yeah, I think the geekiness reason for me, but I really didn't care about freedom. That's something that certainly came secondary. Yeah.
Davey doesn't care about freedom.
No, it came secondary.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm with Simon. I read about Linux and read books on Linux before I'd actually got my hands on using it. And the idea of, you know, software which you could use, modify, even if I don't have the technical skill to do it, that other people do and they can share it, was what got me interested, which is one of the essential freedoms of free software, open source software.
But that goes back to my opening point, which was... the vast majority of people don't care. You are a very small minority, two, that actually care about the freedom of the software on your computer. Most people just want it to work.
You know, but I'm thinking that we've kind of discounted all the other things that people might say, or at least said that it's not clear. They're not a clear advantage. The remote administration, viruses, stability maybe, you know, this idea, we've kind of said that they're not all clear winners for Ubuntu. Mm. So it comes back to me, to the freedom, to the fact that you've got this option, and there are people out there working on this system to make it better, and the community side of things as the major strong point and the major reason to use it.
I mean, that argument certainly holds up with geeks, but when you look at your mother, your wife, are they really going to care about this stuff?
No, my wife doesn't care. She doesn't give a monkey's what the software license is. She just wants to be able to get on Facebook on her laptop. You know, doesn't care what the platform is.
But there is the community out there, and it is not just full of geeks. I mean, Mike from the forums was telling us how they get everybody from "I've never used a computer before" through to, you know, hardcore coders or whatever. And so the community is made up of people who don't care about the freedoms or the ethical side of it, but they're still willing to kind of
get
involved in the community, yeah, or with the community, at least in the Ubuntu community.
Well, I mean, look at us. I mean, I've got machines that I've got non-free software on. This, you know, my laptop I'm using here has got lots of non-free software. So I'm not a complete freedom zealot. And it's very difficult to be a freedom zealot. You know, you have to use something like Ubuntu or GNUSense or something, and it restricts what software you can use due to, you know, those things aren't free.
Hmm.
So it is actually quite difficult to be a, you know, total freedom. And so even if I'm attracted by the idea of free software, I still end up running non-free software as well.
Hmm. So what other reasons we can use to sell Ubuntu?
I don't know. Let's find out what our listeners think.
Yeah.
Get them to tell us what reasons there are to run Ubuntu. Yeah. How do you sell it?
There've got to be some, surely. You can write into podcast@ubuntu-uk.org and tell us what we've missed.
Right, I wasn't here last podcast, but you had a nice competition.
A nice one, as opposed to a rubbish one.
Yeah. We didn't have a normal question this time, did we? Well, how did we do it?
Decided to make it a little bit harder and possibly went a bit too far.
Well, we said we'd get wrong answers, and we did. We got lots of wrong answers.
Well, we didn't get that many. We get more answers when we do the trivia questions than we did for this and look at the picture.
Well, hang on.
Are we asking too much of people?
Well, hang on. For those that haven't actually listened to the previous episode and actually, you know, just happened to listen to this one because they don't normally like us and they don't have us on our RSS feed and just don't care, we actually had a
bitter.
We actually had a lot of CDs in a field. And the point was that people were meant to try and guess how many were there. It was sort of like a sweet in a jar competition, wasn't it?
Well, it wouldn't be very good if it was a sweet in a jar.
Well, yeah. Okay, multiple sweets. And, well, I mean, how many entrants did we have totally?
26, 28, something like that.
Like, totally?
So, I mean, the actual chances of winning was more improved than normal. Because there weren't that many entrants. And how many right answers?
I have to take issue with you there. The chance of winning isn't improved by the fact that there are less people if you got the wrong answer.
Fewer people.
Well, no, to be fair, chaps, don't make me get my cane out.
Please, Daddy, make it stop.
If we didn't have enough correct answers, yeah. Oh, sorry, if we didn't have any correct answers, we would have given it to the nearest one.
Yeah,
we?
That's true.
So, and also, there weren't multiple people getting the correct answer. So, how many correct answers did we get?
We got one correct answer.
Exactly one correct answer.
Yeah, which was very good work. We had quite a few that were in the right ballpark. And so if we hadn't had one correct answer, it would have been between, you know, quite a few people who were within kind of 10 of the right answer.
I'm not sure how people came up with the answer. Looking at the stack of the photos on the website, I'm not sure whether people just looked at it and went, yeah, roughly this many, or whether people actually sat there and zoomed in on the picture and tried to count the pixels.
Well, there was one chap that actually wanted to write a Python program, wasn't there, to actually count it for him.
He wanted to use the Python image library to do it for him.
And we did have at least one request for a higher resolution version of the same photo.
I had a few of those on IRC.
Yeah, which obviously we had to say no to.
So what was the answer?
The answer was 205, believe it or not. And the winner was Gregory Auger.
Well done. And we're going to send Gregory a crummy token for the fantastic Canonical store.
Yes, so £20, isn't it?
£20, and he can use it anytime. It doesn't expire, and if he doesn't use it all, like if he buys a pen or something and he has £19 left, he can keep that and use it on something else.
And you can, of course, use it anywhere in the world. You don't have to be in the UK to use it.
Yep, I mean, it's in British pounds, but obviously it will translate to whatever currency you want to use.
Yep, so well done, Gregory. And we're going to set another competition this time around, which is to...
Are we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, this is going to be a less rubbish one.
Which is going to be for the efficient PC that we reviewed in the last episode, the Wraith.
Yeah, the Wraith.
So we're giving away a decent prize this time.
We're giving away a whole computer.
Hey, they're all decent prizes.
but some are more decent than others.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're giving away a whole computer. You have to have your own monitor and keyboard, but the system unit is what we're going to give away.
The question is, this is a shuttle PC supplied by Efficient PC, and it's configurable. It's called a Wraith, and we want to know what is the highest specification CPU you can get in this model of PC from Efficient PC. So you're going to need to go over to Efficient PC's website, find the Wraith model, dig out what the fastest CPU they have, the highest spec CPU they have, and just email us with the answer.
Simon, where would they send the email?
They sent an email to competition@ubuntu-uk.org.
And what email address should they not send the competition answers to?
Don't send it to the podcast app, because
or any
that's
other address.
Not the competition email address.
So if you send us the right answer before the closing date of this competition, which is the 26th of July, get your answers into that email address by then, and we'll randomly select someone who's given us the right answer and contact them and let them know how we're going to ship the PC to them.
And good luck. We're not going to limit on where we ship it to, are we?
Well, no. I don't know. I mean, if we have to ship it to somewhere where we actually have to pay some sort of ex-SAS person to go and take it out there in the middle of nowhere, I think we need to start talking. But I think anywhere else we're not going to have a problem.
We've got to be inclusive, haven't we? Come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to send it anywhere.
Or space.
Well, I think we've got a special courier who might take it up there for us if it has to get to space.
Good luck, everybody.
I think that's the end.
Yeah, and before we wrap up, there's just time for some feedback. We had a couple of emails, one from Thomas Mashos and one from Wayne Hamilton, who both said really nice things about the podcast. So thanks for that, and thanks for the feedback, guys.
Thanks, guys.
We've had a member of the community come forward and tell us he's going to do us a hardware review, so expect to see that soon.
Yeah, we're going to record that at Lug Radio Live, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly what we want people to do. If you've got a new bit of hardware, a new bit of kit you're using with Ubuntu, let us know. Maybe we could talk to you about it and you could give us a review.
And you had some problems with your Drobo, having sung its praises last time, Alan, didn't you?
I'm not entirely sure I sung its praises last week. Well, maybe I did.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I did. I had a power cut at home. We've got the builders in at home and they cut the power. And as a result, when I turned the Drobo back on, it kept rebooting itself and was not mountable and it went horribly wrong.
But that's not too much of a problem, because you can just take the disk out and stick it in any old PC and get the data off, because it's all in an open standard format file system, isn't it?
Well, it's funny you should say that. No, it's not.
Isn't it?
No, it's a proprietary format.
Right.
And if you take the disks out and put them in any other machine, they're completely unreadable.
Wow, so you essentially kind of put your data in something that's untestable and unsupportable, and that only a small number of people in the world can do anything about.
I had a support contract.
Good.
I have a support contract.
Goodbye.
And I contacted them, and they very kindly promptly responded within an hour, telling me to turn it off and then turn it back on again.
Brilliant.
Fixed it, though.
Well, it is fortunate that the redundancy isn't redundant in that instance.
Yeah. Redundancy.
Right, don't forget, we want to hear from you. You can get us in a number of different ways. Find us on Twitter at twitter.com/UPC.
You can send us an email to podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
Or you can get in touch with us in our IRC channel, which is #ubuntu-uk, which is on the Freenode network.
Or there's our voicemail number, which is on our contact page on the website, where you can leave up to 30 seconds of voicemail.
Thanks to all the mirrors, showmedo.com, Bitfolk.
And we never thank ourselves, because we all host mirrors as well. And thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Al.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks. Tony. Thanks. Yeah, that's it, Tony.
Thanks, Dave.
We'll see you next time, when we'll have some content from Lug Radio Live.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.